guitar.
No fear. No political correctness. No wokeism. You're listening to Underground USA.
Thanks for downloading, listening, and sharing. My name is Frank Salvato. Before we get into this morning's segment on America's Third Watch, I wanted to touch on the subject of this Sunday's piece titled A Radical Marxist Progressive Takes the Helm at NPR. Catherine Maher is the new CEO at National Public Radio. She is being excoriated over her past tweets that expose her as an uber-radical leftist. Further, one of her first official acts was to punish a whistleblower who exposed the almost total left-wing bias at NPR, castigating him so profusely that he resigned after being suspended without pay. Here's a short clip that examples her Marxist progressive ideology. In it, she advances a level of moral relativism on the subject of truth that should find you extremely uncomfortable.
That perhaps for our most tricky disagreements, seeking the truth and seeking to convince others of the truth might not be the right place to start. In fact, our reverence for the truth might be a distraction that's getting in the way of finding common ground and getting things done. Now, that is not to say that the truth doesn't exist, nor is it to say that the truth isn't important. Clearly, the search for the truth has led us to do great things, to learn great things. But I think if I were to really ask you to think about this, one of the things that we could all acknowledge is that part of the reason we have such glorious chronicles to the human experience and all forms of culture is because we acknowledge there are many different truths. And so in the spirit of that, I'm certain that the truth exists for you and probably for the person sitting next to you. But this may not be the same truth. This is because the truth of the matter is very often, for many people, what happens when we merge facts about the world with our beliefs about the world. So we all have different truths.
If you subscribe to undergroundusa.com, you will receive the Sunday article in your email inbox or your Substack app. If you don't subscribe, please stop by and do so. It's free, but offers the option of supporting our work through a paid subscription as well. Maher is a quintessential example of what is wrong with the mainstream media, how it has become a propaganda machine for the Marxist-based woke left. Congress should really move to defund or at least suspend funding for NPR until its journalistic and editorial staffs are balanced in their ideologies and reflective of the whole of the American people. Today, it most certainly is not. When we come back, this morning's segment on America's Third Watch, broadcast on the Genesis and Salem Broadcasting Networks.
When someone is having a stroke, every minute counts. Just as putting out a fire quickly can stop it from spreading, treating a stroke quickly can reduce damage to the brain. The clock begins ticking as soon as you spot the signs of a stroke, because some treatments can only be used if the patient reaches the hospital in the first 3 hours after symptoms appear. So don't wait. Call 911 right away and get the person to a hospital immediately, even if the symptoms go away. If you think someone is having a stroke, remember the word FAST. F is for face. Ask the person to smile and check whether one side of their face is drooping. A is for arms. Have the person raise both arms and see if one arm drifts downwards. S is for speech. Ask the person to repeat a short phrase and notice if their words sound slurred. And finally, T is for time. If you spot any of these signs, call 911 right away to get the person to a hospital fast. Strokes are medical emergencies. The sooner a patient gets treatment, the better their chance of a good recovery.
Thank you.
News, insight, passion. AM 930, The Answer.
But folks, it's Friday. You know what that means. It means we've got Frank Salvato from undergroundusa.com, also author of the book Nullification. And I'm going to go out on a limb here, and I'm going to think that Frank and I are both marked safe from being eaten by cannibals. I think if we got nothing else, we've got that going for us. Good morning, Frank.
Yeah, Mr. Kyle, I have not seen any teeth marks anywhere on my body, so I guess I'm all right.
That's good. Well, yeah, we had, of course, Joe Biden talking about his uncle in World War II that somehow almost got eaten by cannibals. That was, he thought they were eaten by cannibals, but he unfortunately crashed in the ocean in the Pacific Ocean out north of New Guinea, and the reports are that all the crew of that plane disappeared beneath the waves with the plane. I'm very unfortunate. But here we go again, Frank, another crazy Bidenism. Isn't that something?
Well, imagine that, an embellishment from Joe Biden. You know, we knew there were going to be some starting to emerge, getting closer to November. But I'll bet you nobody had the square in the squares game that said cannibal.
Right. That's right. Yeah, that's completely out of left field. So I guess what we know now is that Corn Pop was a bad dude and my uncle got eaten by cannibals. You know, I hope that comes up in the debate somewhere.
You just wait till the T-shirts start coming out, because you know somebody's making those.
Yeah, I mean, and of course, I love to flip the script. Imagine it. What if Trump said, you know, my great-grandfather was eaten by cannibals, and, you know, this kind of thing. I'd say he's nuts, you know.
I hate to say it, but he would have said it was huge.
That's why we love Fridays so very much here on this show, everybody. Frank, what do you make of this retaliation by Israel? They're calling it limited. When is a strike now to strike, I guess. I don't know.
Well, I think it was more of a message being sent than anything else, because it did happen on the Supreme Leader's birthday.
Oh, interesting. You know, I did not know that. That's very cool.
Khomeini's birthday. So during, you know, the celebrations were happening, and they decided to launch something that targeted one of the most sensitive places inside Iran, not to mention Syria. You know, that's where the Iranian Revolutionary Guard's active headquarters is for the Hezbollah campaign. So, you know, they hit Syria, too. We don't know what happened in Syria. No information is coming out yet. I imagine as we move forward and they start releasing more information, we're going to learn about more of the details that make the strike significant beyond the messaging. I do not believe that this is something that is their total response, because Israel's not that impotent when they decide to strike.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have an incredible fighting force. So if they wanted to hit something in Natanz, they would have, and it would have been spectacular. This could also be something that was a bright, shiny thing. Pay attention to what we're doing over here, because we're doing this over here. They're very good at doing that, an active deflection of attention. So I believe in the next 24 to 48 hours, we'll learn a lot more about what they were doing. If it was just a message, it was a hell of a message. Where we're not scared to go inside the country of Iran, and we're not scared to do it on a Friday, which is a big religious day in the Muslim world, and we're not afraid to do it on a special occasion like the Supreme Leader's birthday. You know,
no kidding. Well, it
was a middle finger. So.
Yeah. Well, indeed. No, I think you're exactly right. And you know, one of the things that I was thinking about earlier was that as you mentioned, going into Iran would have been unthinkable. That would have been a catalyst for all-out war not all that long ago. And now it seems like, okay, well, you know, unprecedented Iran attacks Israel, from its own soil. Israel now goes into Iran. You know, it's, we're off into the twilight zone here, it seems like. And what's the next shoe to drop if, you know, now these boundaries have been crossed?
Well, you got to remember, Iran likes to saber rattle. The mullahs like the saber rattle when it comes to death and destruction and we'll annihilate you and this, that, and the other. They got a wake-up call because every single thing they threw at Israel last Saturday, 99% of every single thing they threw at Israel didn't land a punch.
Right.
Israel proved that their defenses are superior to Iran's offense. So Iran has to be a little shaken on this because they didn't strike a blow.
One of the things, of course, Frank, that we also saw happening was the arrest of, I think, 108 pro-Palestinian protesters at Columbia University. But one of the things that is very unsettling, to say the least, is that you have these young people actually saying things like, we are Hamas, basically. That leads me to this notion of radicalization. That sometimes we hear, oh, you have some lone wolf and they get radicalized and they go to the Middle East and they want to join the jihad. But we're actually having larger numbers of people, in my opinion, being radicalized here.
Yeah, included in that 108 was Ilhan Omar's daughter.
Yeah.
At Columbia getting arrested. This is one of those things, and it really is a commentary on society as a whole, where it's just the thing to be a part of today. You know, it's as if everybody is romanticizing the 60s about how cool it was to be a revolutionary with all the tie-dye and the marching and the protesting and the bullhorns and let's take over this campus, this and this office, that. If they ever had to go over to Gaza to fight for what they're chanting about, they would run and hide crying like a bunch of little cowards.
Yeah.
You know, it's cool to protest because you're part of the it crowd. You know, and if you're not part of the it crowd, then you're part of the rebellious crowd. Right up until there's consequences for your actions. Mm-hmm. You know, and I know the president of Colombia was before Congress last week and guaranteed that there would be consequences for the actions, was even talking about expulsions. You start expelling students for transgressing the policies about protesting on campus, and you will see these things come to a screeching halt, especially when they're foreign students here on student visas, and those visas are revoked because they're not enrolled anymore. You know,
right.
So I truly believe that 90% of these kids don't know what the hell they're actually participating in. They're just doing it because it's the social thing to do on campus. And especially on campuses like Columbia and Berkeley and Harvard and Princeton. So let's give them some consequences for their actions. If you're going to rush into the chancellor's office and have a sit down and that's against policy, if you're going to shout someone down and the policy has been put in place that you can't do that because free speech is more important than your fragile or disingenuous feelings, then let's have some consequences like getting expelled. And if that's the case, honest, you're going to see it come to a screeching halt. Because when faced with adverse consequences for bad actions, then these kids turn into cowards. They just do. They're brave on social media, and they're brave when they're in a crowd, but you get them one-on-one with consequences, and they buckle. Now, is free speech important on a college campus? Yes, it is. But there's ways to exercise your free speech without being a jerk. When you're demanding that taxpayers pay your tuition because you took out a student loan and you're screaming death to America, what kind of spoiled ingrate are you?
The worst kind. Well, you know, Rashida Tlaib is evidently upset you know, because if you're anti-Israel, you know, you can go out there and protest, and there really shouldn't be any consequences, I guess, because they're protesting, quote, genocide, unquote. So the left, the radicals always come up with something that supersedes everything else, totally justifies what they're doing. And so somehow they get to operate with total impunity without these kinds of consequences that you're talking about.
They enjoy throwing words around like genocide and Hitler, but where is the act of genocide? Israel gives almost 48 hours notice of when they're going to strike someplace. What other fighting force in the history of time has ever done that?
Yeah.
You know, they don't. They don't. It's never happened. So where is the genocide? I would put it to Omar that the people who are fomenting a genocide of their own people are the Hamas operatives who hide behind women and children and civilians and put armories underneath hospitals and schools and children's playgrounds. You know, you start doing that, you're putting your own people in the crosshairs saying, I'm more important than the civilians.
Yeah, but that's abhorrent to you and I and to most people, you know, within the sound of our voices here. That's totally abhorrent, but it's not abhorrent to Hamas. And that is just lost, evidently, on a lot of these, I hate to say, young people who are susceptible to radicalization in this regard.
Well, and again, I'm not sure that a lot of the people on the college campuses have been radicalized. I think they see it something as a cool movement to be a part of. So, you know, they're romanticizing about 40 years into the future when they say, I was a part of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like the protests of 1968 in Chicago. You know, and even then, when you delve into who was funding the anti-war movement in the United States, it has now been proven beyond any doubt that the Russians were just pouring money into that movement in order to use an ideological battleground here in the United States to their benefit.
Yeah.
So while they were protesting a war they didn't believe in and had every right to do so, this is not that. It just isn't. What they're forwarding here is really, it's based on non-truths and fantasy. So I have to believe this is like, hey, man, this is the new bar that opened on campus. Did you go? it's the new club downtown. Have you been there yet? Have you been to the anti-Israel rally? Yeah, we're all going about 2:00, man, and then we're going to lunch afterwards.
Yeah. Well, what if you had protesters on a campus and they did exactly the same thing? They had the pup tents and they had all the stuff, and their message was, stop prosecuting Donald Trump. I wonder what the reaction would be.
Yeah, it would never happen. It would never happen because it's not the cool thing to do. Going to an anti-Israel rally is, and it's sick, but it's the cool thing to do on liberal campuses today. It's the cool thing to do to be anti-Israel, to be pro-Palestinian, because they've fallen for the canard that the poor Palestinians are starving. They're not. And in the impoverished sectors of Gaza and the West Bank, it's because Hamas has sequestered the food. You know, Hamas is a terrorist organization, people. It's a terrorist group. We recognize the Biden administration, as liberal as it is, as anti-Semitic as it is, they recognize Hamas as a terror organization. So why are people thinking it's cool to support a terror organization? And when they, well, we're just doing it for the Gazans. The Gazans elected these people to be their government. And after October 7th, over 70% supported the actions that Hamas executed. Yeah. So they're culpable.
Yeah, that's very chilling indeed. And what it does, it paints an entirely different picture of this narrative that Israel is hell-bent on genocide to destroy all Palestinians, and they're doing it with impunity, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, when the facts come into play here, it kind of throws a wrench into the cool aspect of going to the protest at 2:30 and then hitting the clubs.
You know, we're not going to try to go near the sun. We're certainly not going to go to the other side of the island, like on Gilligan's Island, because they never wanted to go over there because there were the headhunters, as I recall. So,
yeah, and you don't want to follow Biden's uncle either, because the headhunters and the cannibals lived on that side of the island.
Exactly. I mean, I'm telling you, under any other circumstances, Frank, this would all be so hilarious, but yet this is the guy running for president. It's the guy who is the president, and yet I can't imagine any other candidate in history who could get it wrong like this on a consistent basis and still be the party's nominee no matter what.
Yeah, it's almost like a drinking game where you have to pull a bunch of different cards from a box and then cobble together a claim. You know, maybe we should coin that and get the little box that's out there and call it Bidenomics. And we'll just, you have to pull five cards. One is a noun and a verb and a subject, and you have to cobble together a line of BS, and everybody gets to vote on who wins that round.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we haven't heard too much.
You know that's gonna pop up somewhere now.
Well, sure. Absolutely, it will. And it's just that this is a gift that keeps on giving. And sometimes, you know, I have to be really candid, and that is, you know, we're watching Joe Biden, but yet it's like we're watching Grandpa, who's having all this trouble, and yet they keep sending him out there. And under any other circumstances, if he was the CEO of some company somewhere or something, he would just retire quietly. He couldn't go on like this.
The people behind the curtain want to have somebody that they can completely control. Now, it used to be where you had to have dirt on somebody. They've stumbled upon the idea that if you put someone out there that you can cajole with ice cream and all the trappings of the presidency, that they can control him to move an agenda forward that's just horrible for the country. It's Marxist in nature, and it's bad for the economy, it's bad for the people, it's bad for society, it's bad for almost every policy that we have. And they have him in this position so that they can flood the population with people who are not citizens. And as you see in location after location, like New York, Illinois, and California, they're trying everything they can to make sure that they can pull a ballot in November. They want to make the Democrat Party the permanent party, the uniparty in Washington, D.C. at the federal level. One of the reasons it's so very important to re-empower the states. If we re-empower the states, whether it's by exercising individualism at the state level or using nullification to nullify bad, unconstitutional federal law, then you neuter that effort because it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. That's why this is a wonderful tool for states to use. And it stops this centralized government Marxism and neuters the bureaucracy, which is what we need today, because the cabal behind the curtain, they don't have America's best interest at heart. They're the same radicals, you know, born of not only a foreign spice, but the aging radical of the 1960s, who thought the United States just sucked. You know, John Kerry, Hillary Clinton, and then you've got the new breed, the Susan Rices, you know, the Powers, the Susan Powers, these guys, they despise the United States. They think it's an imperialistic colonizing force. They never give our country credit for what it's done good in the world. It's always, we're bad and we're the epicenter of evil. So that's who's running our country, and they've got a blithering idiot in front of the curtain that would rather talk about his uncle getting eaten by cannibals.
Exactly. Well said, Frank. Let's head over to the telephone line. We've got Anthony in Tampa this morning who's listening in. He's got a question or comment for you. Good morning, Anthony.
Good morning. Yeah, I'd like to say that little segment of the woman giving her description of the moon's matter is sort of the same irrelevant gibberish and Neil deGrasse Tyson, the evolutionary physicist, put out on his special on TV with all the CGIs trying to convince people that he had some knowledge of what's existing in the universe. Please, God's probably looking down at him and wondering, where did this yokel come from? Again, the late Rush Limbaugh categorized the young people on the radical side of on the left as young brains full of mush. And that's pretty much, Frank, what you described, that a large percentage of those taking part in these radicalized Free Palestine marches are just, they don't know what they're getting into. They're just in it for the joy of being a part of something that's supposedly rebellious. But lo and behold, when the surprise comes upon them, that those who are bringing upon these marches, are their religious intent is they're using them as fodder. But sooner or later, they'll know when the long run, what they're going to do with them. The alphabet stealer groups, the young punks out there taking the progressive left, they have a big surprise when they really dig in deep of what these Palestinian supporters are all about. It's going to be a big, scary surprise. And these are the same people who know more about Star Wars than they do about what happened in the Nazi Germany.
Yeah, right.
And most of them are Holocaust deniers. And it's a shame because soldiers who took part in liberating those camps are starting to die off pretty quick. And that's the main part of the history right there that's going away. And it's kind of scary, man. So it's up to the parents to reel in these kids and really set them down and get down to the true facts of history. So thank you so much.
Hey, thanks, Anthony. We appreciate the call. Yeah, what do you think, Frank? We able to say we can't argue with what he's talking about.
No, every generation has its useful idiots, you know, and these are the useful idiots of this generation, the kids who feel they need to be a part of something bigger than themselves, because the false level of self-esteem that has been installed in them through the education process from kindergarten to 12th grade, it failed them. They don't have true self-esteem. They didn't learn from failures and overcome and achieve. They've been given everything. So they necessarily need to be a part of something bigger than themselves because they have no self-worth.
Yeah.
And fall prey to being useful idiots by nefarious forces.
Yeah, you took the words right out of my mouth. That's the thing, is that makes them susceptible to being drawn into something like that. That feeling, it's like being in a gang. Right.
Just, yeah,
I feel like I belong. I'm in a gang. That kind of thing.
Yeah. And then later on in life, when if and that's a big if they decide to continue learning about the things that they feel are important, they fade away from the activism of this useful idiocy and fall silent on what they've said in the past instead of admitting that they're wrong because they've never learned to overcome a mistake or admit their own culpability.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. This is really scary stuff because we're talking about it right here, right? In April of 2024. Imagine what things would be like in April of 2030, or 2035, or, 20 years from now. It just seems to be a lot more scary. But I tell you what, Frank, we appreciate you so very, very much, of course. And we're going to talk to you again on Monday, my friend.
You stay low, my friend. Have a good weekend.
You too. Take care. Frank Silvato, everybody. UndergroundUSA.com is the website.
If you like the podcast, subscribe, leave a comment, rate it if your platform lets you. Be sure to head on over to UndergroundUSA.com to sign up for our Substack, which comes straight to you, circumventing the censors and the fact checkers, because we both know that they're worthless. And that's been proven over time. And be sure to pick up your copy of Nullification, The Case for Decentralizing the Federal Government, available in Kindle and paperback over at Amazon.com. You're listening to Underground USA. My name is Frank Salvato, and we will be back right after this.
This podcast is a production of the Compass Point Group.
I'm Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. My main focus was to be the best I could be on the basketball court. The first inkling that something was wrong was I started to notice that I couldn't do things without losing my breath. I still didn't think that it was anything serious until I couldn't make it to the airport. Every like 20 or 30 yards, I had to sit down and get my breath. Every physical exertion seemed to exhaust me. I knew something was wrong, and then I went to a baseball game with some friends, and I couldn't deal with any exertion. And finally, I went from the baseball game to the hospital where I was diagnosed with AFib. When I first noticed symptoms, I should have gone to the doctor and told them what was happening. Instead, I tried to let it pass. It took me listening to the cardiologist to help me get it straight as to what I needed to do. AFib increases the risk of stroke about 5 times. So you need to go and find out what's happening. You need to know all of it and you need to deal with it. It took me a while before I got wise. The No Time to Wait campaign expresses the urgency that people need to find out if they have AFib. I want my experience to help others understand the symptoms of atrial fibrillation. I didn't pay attention to my symptoms, which kept coming and going, or discuss them with my doctor. Experiencing irregular heartbeat, heart racing, chest pain, or any other AFib symptoms, including shortness of breath, fatigue, or lightheadedness, you should talk to your doctor. When it comes to your health, this is no time to wait.